Stu Does America.
State of the Race podcast is completely free to you, available under the Stu Does America podcast stream audio only. Just go there and subscribe to the feed. You'll get it when it comes out. Probably one coming up, I'm sure, this week with the state of the Democratic Party on full display. We'll get into that. Also, watch the show, plus a bunch of great bonus content on our YouTube page. Now, there's a couple things I want to tell you about. Number one, tonight at some point I'm going to go live after the big speeches at the Democratic National Convention, do a YouTube live for you with some quick commentary and review and some of your questions. So go there, follow the page, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Click the bell for notifications. Then you'll know when we go live. You get an alert from YouTube, and you can check us out there. We also have a new comedy bit going up later today. I'll tell you about that in a little bit. But go there and follow the page. You'll get all of it. Chris Bedford is here in a little bit to explain how Kamala is making all of Hillary Clinton's old mistakes. If you like maybe if you're like some people that I may know, placing a bet or two on the election season's an interesting way to take it all in. But I've got the latest on your legality to do so. First, we're going to start, though, with the 2024 DNC insanity. The convention is here. It is going to be bonkers tonight. Watch it along with us and then check out the YouTube live a little bit later on. Let me give you a little picture as to what is coming your way, though. Tonight, Democratic National Convention lineup for Monday: Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Karen Bass, and AOC among speakers. If that doesn't get you riled up enough, I don't know what will. I mean, Joe Biden, the guy they tossed out unceremoniously, Hillary Clinton, who they seem to hate. I think the Democrats hate Hillary more than even we do. And then AOC, who's obviously a joke, and Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles. I mean, not exactly an inspiring crew, but it is night one, right? This is when you dump kind of like the people you don't really want to remember or part of the party. You kind of dump them on night one, get them out of the way. We will go into some of that tonight. It's just not normally the sitting president isn't usually the person you're dumping on night one. But what are you going to do? That's the way it works. But if that's not enough for you, you also have Kerry Washington and Mindy Kaling. They will serve as DNC hosts. Now, of course, you'll recognize Mindy Kaling as kind of the B player on The Office, a side character on The Office, Kelly. And then Kerry Washington, you'll remember from such hits as, there's a lot of them. And we only have an hour long show. I can't get through all of them, obviously. And you might say, well, where are all the, don't they have like all the good celebrities? Well, yes. I mean, you know, George Clooney, of course, couldn't really make it since he was responsible for part of the coup to get Joe Biden thrown out of the party. You'd think he'd be welcomed by at least Kamala Harris. Maybe he'll come on night three or night four, but really can't be the Joe Biden night with George Clooney. And then all the other big celebrities are outside on Hamas's side of the protests, I assume, out there protesting against Jews. Protests threaten to overshadow the DNC. And this is a big problem, of course, for the DNC. They see all these protesters, the pro-Hamas wing of their party, all out in force. They depend on them, and they actually picked the vice president because of this wing of the party. So you'd think, once again, they'd be welcomed with open arms. But as you may know, with people who support terrorist groups, they don't typically get appeased by anything that you do. Just because you gave them the vice presidential pick on a silver platter, that's not going to be enough for the pro-Hamas side of the argument. They kind of want it all, don't they? And so they are out there calling Kamala Harris Killer Kamala. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Now, the media has been pretty much in line, still giving pretty good coverage of Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris was hamstrung by caution. Now she's the Democrats' driving force. A very long and an interesting article from the Wall Street Journal. But you see the framing here, that the reason why everyone thought Kamala Harris was a terrible vice president for years and years and years was because she was too cautious. She didn't want to offend or overstep her bounds with Joe Biden. And that's why she laid in the background and didn't do anything for 3.5 years. That's what you're supposed to believe today. Now, I can't say that's what you're supposed to believe for tomorrow. There may be a new story tomorrow, and that's what you will now need to believe. But for now, you're supposed to believe Kamala Harris was too cautious. And that's why she had terrible approval ratings and nobody liked her. Too cautious. the woman who, in about 9 seconds, wrapped up the Democratic nomination without anyone voting for her, too cautious. Got that? Remember what you're supposed to say. That's the most important thing you can do every day when you wake up. What am I supposed to say publicly today? What are my opinions supposed to be? Please, oh, media, tell me what they shall be. And the media today has told you Kamala Harris is too cautious. Tomorrow, it might be that she's too aggressive. So you have to understand, don't get too stuck in what you're saying today, because tomorrow you may need to disagree with it completely. But we will let you know when that happens. Also, we'll let you know where to go to the truck to get your free vasectomy and abortion. Yes, free vasectomies and abortions for DNC attendees. Yes, that's right. Just every single delegate can come on down and you can get a brand new free abortion. And by the way, caller number 10, vasectomy time. Give us a call. You will be awarded on the mobile vasectomy and abortion hut. Yes, it's that type of party. Congratulations. I will say I'm absolutely against abortion. 100% against abortion. If I had to pick one place, though, like you were like, hey, gun to your head, you got to pick one place where abortion will be legal. The Democratic National Convention's not a terrible choice. I mean, NAMBLA would probably be where I would start, but it might be number two. So I'm just going to throw that out there. If that situation ever arises, you can drive that mobile abortion hut right over to the DNC, and I'm not going to have too much of a problem with it. Okay, this has been interesting because we've been talking about the media sort of flip-flopping a little bit, right? The media has some concerns about the Kamala Harris campaign, and you might not notice that by the way they've been reporting on them. And it's only been some cracks in the surface. There hasn't been an outright revolt on Harris. It's just been like, hey, like, what's going on? We played the clip for you on this show of Jim Acosta saying, would it kill you guys to have a press conference? I mean, can you just guarantee one by the end of the month? Like, and of course, the spokesperson said no. We saw that. And we saw when she came out with her price controls, a lot of economics reporters, even ones that were aligned more with the left, were like, okay, price controls are a terrible idea. We've tried this over and over and over again. It never works. It's terrible for the economy. I mean, we love you, Kamala. We can't go there. Obviously, there are certain lines, right? I can't go there. And then we get this one from the New York Times today. Pretty interesting. Harris's early campaign, heavy on buzz, light on policy. Now, you might say to yourself, the reason why it's heavy on buzz and light on policy is because the New York Times has done nothing but celebrate her and has not asked her a question yet. Neither has the Wall Street. No one's really asked her one question about policy. So, you know, like it's easy to be a buzzy candidate when no one asks what you're going to do with the country if you get a control of it. That's kind of a big problem. But I am happy that they're at least asking the question and pointing it out in ways like this. When Hillary Clinton ran for president in 2016, she had more than 200 distinct policy proposals. 4 years ago, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. had a task force write a 110-page document for his White House bid. Note that, by the way, they don't say that Biden wrote it himself. It was a task force who did it. Obviously, he didn't do it himself. Now, Vice President Kamala Harris does not have a policy page on her campaign website. Is that a problem for anybody else? For me, kind of a problem. Because, you know, Kamala Harris hasn't announced anything that she wants to do except a couple of leaks through campaign surrogates to reporters at the New York Times and other venues. I would argue that's not enough. Maybe state the policies that you believe are good and let people pick them apart if they want to pick them apart. And this is the thing. If you're sitting back and you're thinking to yourself, well, what's this Kamala Harris presidency going to be like? Let me give you a couple of sections of this story and others to highlight exactly what it's going to be like, because it's interesting. You might not be considering Kamala Harris, but I think a lot of people are. And one of the reasons why I think they are is because one of the things they hated about the Trump versus Biden rematch was it was a rematch. Like, they're bored of these two people, right? They're like, Joe Biden, could he possibly be more boring a human being? And Donald Trump, like, while he's obviously exciting in a way. I've said this before, but he's exciting in the way that Fast and Furious sequels are exciting. A lot of explosions, a lot of car chases, a lot going on. But honestly, once you've seen a couple of these things flare up, a couple of the explosions, planes flying through the sky and then landing on trains or whatever the hell's going on in these movies, you're like, all right. I mean, like, it's fun for a little bit, but like, I've seen it before. And I think the American people got there. What Trump has tried to do, campaign-wise, is separate Kamala Harris in a way from Joe Biden. At least early on, they tried to do this and say, basically, she's worse, right? Like, she's the border czar. She's the one responsible for the border. And that's important in some ways when it's accurate. But also, like, it allows her to be essentially a new candidate. When she's not a new candidate, she's the vice president of the United States. She owns all of this. She is Joe Biden 2.0. We did a show last week. Stu does Joe Biden 2.0. Unfortunate title in some ways, but also you get the point. This is a clone. This is the same person with the same terrible policies. She's just younger. That's it. Well, let me give you a couple examples of where this is going. And this is from the New York Times. You don't have to go to conservative sources to find it. She has also, no, they're talking about her not doing anything about policy issues. She has not addressed climate issues in any depth, though that is of little concern to Senator Edward J. Markey of Massachusetts, an author of the Green New Deal, who said Ms. Harris had earned her environmental chops by helping pass the Inflation Reduction Act in 2022. Quote, I know it's in her DNA to be a historic environmental leader, Mr. Markey said. The first agenda has to be to win. They know what she's going to be when she's president of the United States, and a socialist, if we're lucky. But they need her to win first, so they understand she's not going to say any of this stuff. They're telling you in advance. Let me give you another example of this. And this is, by the way, you go through this and you say, well, the New York Times is actually starting to come around, are they? Well, no, not really. They just want to have this like sheen of journalism. They want the deniability. And Kamala Harris is making their job difficult. Kamala Harris won't do anything. And it's so obvious. Journalists are left to carry too much water. And they're like, please. It's the same way Jim Acosta asked it. Would you kill you to freaking give us a press conference so we can at least say you're trying to reach out to people? They want to be able to justify cheering on the Harris situation, but they also want to call themselves journalists, this high-minded ideal. Well, that's not really around anymore. And basically what these things are like, you know, hey, she hasn't released any policy papers. That's not as much journalism as it is just campaign advice. They're like, hey, you need to do this stuff. You know, we don't want to get on your case here, but we're gently nudging you. You got to do some of this stuff. You can't just ride this out the entire time. Now, there's another big profile in the New York Times on Joe Biden. A little summary as well. 6 takeaways from the magazine's profile of Joe Biden. But this is another situation. Remember what I said. They're telling you in advance she's going to be radical. She is going to be radical. Who's the most radical senator in the Senate? You might say Bernie Sanders. And of course, when Kamala Harris was there, she was actually rated more liberal than Bernie Sanders. But let's throw that out for a second. You go Bernie Sanders, right? Bernie Sanders is a socialist. He's an out socialist. He's a guy who's not even a Democrat. He's an independent because he's so far to the left. He actually only enters the Democratic Party when he wants to run for president and then leaves it again when the elections are over. This is true. He is an independent right now. But listen to this exchange from this profile. Biden came to see Bernie Sanders, his chief opponent in the 2020 Democratic primaries, as the standard bearer of a movement that would be necessary for his own success as a president. When Sanders visited the White House in early 2021, he told Biden he wanted to see the bill that would become the Inflation Reduction Act, funded to the tune of $5 trillion to $6 trillion. Bernie, the president replied, I want to go as big as we can possibly get. That's what Biden did. He came to you and he said, I'm moderate. Look at me. I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm Lunchbox Joe. Vote me in. And then he ran as a socialist. He did it. And we now know behind the scenes that he did it. Of course, the New York Times didn't give us that little nugget until now. But whatever. At least we know what he was doing behind the scenes. Radical, radical stuff. And the party is still in disarray. Now, I don't know if they can pull it together for an actual Kamala Harris win. I hope they can't. I mean, if this is any indication, we know we know they probably won't get it together. A Democratic National Committee releases party platform ahead of convention. Now, that's a pretty standard thing to do as a party. Here is a little pullout, a nice little cover sheet, 24, Democratic Party platform. The name of the file was a final... it wasn't final solution. I mean, you might think final solution might be the way they'd go these days, but it was like final project, final platform. It was supposed to be the final one. Now, if you don't think, if you're thinking like, oh, and this is, by the way, the entire thing. I have it right here. And we've been going through it all day. There's all sorts of fun stuff in here. But let me just give you a couple little highlights. First of all, if you don't think they're woke or you don't think they're insane, literally the first page after that cover sheet I just showed you is this. It is a Democratic National Convention land acknowledgement. I won't read the entire thing because I don't have too much time, but basically it is, hey, we're so sorry for being here on stolen land. The people who really own this land here in Illinois are a bunch of Indian tribes, and we're here basically stewarding, I think they use the word stewarding, the land for the people we essentially stole it from. So they just want to acknowledge that this isn't actually theirs and they're there under false pretenses because, you know, stolen land and all. That's how they start their own platform. But let me give you a couple of other highlights. This is interesting. This election is a choice between two very economic visions for America. Donald Trump, who sees the world from his country club at Mar-a-Lago, and Joe Biden, who sees it from the kitchen tables in Scranton, like the one he grew up around. Did anyone look at this document before they published it? Joe Biden is not the nominee anymore. Remember, you threw him out in a coup. Nancy Pelosi came in, just basically said who she wanted to be. You remember that whole thing? Okay, well, you might say, eh. And by the way, that was the first page after the land acknowledgement. They said their candidate was Joe Biden. You might say, well, okay, they said it Joe Biden one time. Eh, not exactly one time. Here's another one. Thanks to President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law, blah, 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 blah. They're going to tap into resources that have helped them grow. And in a second Biden term, we'll make sure the Navigator program is permanent and include new lenders, new markets, and fair taxes. Yeah, see, the problem is he's not going to have a second term because you threw him out after all your voters voted for him. So that's not really going to work. In fact, we found at least 10 different times they have referred to a second Joe Biden term. I've seen a couple people online say they've found at least 15 or more when it comes to this. They didn't even bother to look at their own platform when they changed candidates. That's what a disaster this is. So the best thing, if you're Donald Trump, that you can look forward to is you are blessed by having really pathetic opponents. You know, maybe you can kind of look at this and say, look, at the end of the day, when people start seeing Kamala Harris, she has to make these proposals. I mean, think about this. She had weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks to come up with something shiny and new. She came up with no taxes on tips that she stole from Trump and price controls. This is not exactly a brainiac you're going up against here. The bottom line is keep tying her to what people have seen over the past 4 years. Do they really want four more years of that? Because I guess they can have it. She's here. She's going to do the same stuff, if not more radical. So if you want more of that, it is an option. On the other hand, you can go to a different direction and reverse what the last 4 years have been, which has been really tough times for most of the people. So I think that message is a winning one. Attacking, you know, the governor of Georgia is not a winning strategy. Okay, that's not going to be a big thing. Attacking Mike Pence is not going to be a winning strategy here. You got to stick to message. I don't know. Trump's got a lot of good things that he does. Is he capable of doing that? Probably not for a long period of time. But on the other hand, he's going up against Kamala Harris. How good of a job does he really need to do? I was on vacation a couple of weeks ago in Florida, and my son had like an earache situation. He had lots of pain in his ear, couldn't even go to sleep. So in the middle of the night, I got to run out to a CVS, which is like a million miles away, and try to get him some eardrops. It was a pain. It was not a fun thing. And on the way there, I was driving there, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm so tired. I just want to go to bed. And then I thought, you know what would be a lot easier than doing this? Having the Jace case that I have with me, not in another state, you should travel with your Jace case. Your Jace case is a great type of thing for that exact type of situation. When you have a very basic type of ailment, which usually is no problem, antibiotics, you know, some eardrops, basic things can take care of something like that. But an infection, you probably need the antibiotics. And that's why the Jace case would have been a lot easier than what I wound up having to do. This is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. It provides 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. And there are add-on options too, like Tamiflu, which is going to be a lot harder to get during flu season. And if this bird flu turns into anything, Jace is hosting an exclusive giveaway where you can win a Jace case for life. You get a free Jace case every year for the rest of your life. No purchase necessary to enter. Don't miss out. This giveaway only runs until August 31st, which is pretty soon, actually, what a week or two away. So enter today. Go to jace.com/stu. And if you're ordering a Jace case, enter the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at jace.com, jase.com/stu. The code is STU, and it's the Jace case from Jace Medical. I want to bring in Chris Bedford to the program. He's a senior politics editor and D.C. correspondent for Blaze News. He has a new piece out today, Kamala's Risky Hillary Clinton Gambit. Be sure to check it out at theblaze.com. Chris, thanks for coming on the show.
Glad to be here.
You know, I was thinking, you know, no one wants to be accused of emulating Hillary Clinton. That's never a good thing for anybody. But in a way, it actually would be kind of good for Kamala Harris, because with all the bluster around her rise in the polls, she's still in a much worse situation than Clinton was in the polls in 2016. So maybe this is a roundabout compliment.
Yeah, in some ways, you know, Hillary Clinton actually had a pretty solid career. I mean, a lot of it was built off of inter-party connections and the power that she built up. She used her ability as first lady to pull together with her husband a multi-billion-dollar international organization, largely based on donations from people in countries who expected her to one day be president, just like her husband had been. And then she turned that into carpet bagging into a New York senator job, and then accepted a position on Barack Obama's cabinet, and then supposedly was sold to us as just the next great thing. But she had a couple problems that Kamala Harris also has. One, for all of those accomplishments and all of those titles, she always struggled with likability. Her movements, her personality seemed kind of mechanical. She was pretty openly Machiavellian. Kamala Harris, I think, has an even worse problem than Hillary Clinton in that regard. You've got quotes that have been reported out from Politico senior editors that Joe Biden says she doesn't even know who she wants to be. You have frequent staff defections. People don't like her there. The Democratic voters didn't like her at all in the 2020 primary. You've got the Michelle and Barack Obama, who have a pretty rough relationship with her. If you remember back to the 2020, that weird, peculiar DNC that was empty with just Joe Biden on the stage. Well, Michelle Obama came in with a video congratulating Joe Biden on the nomination, didn't mention Kamala once. This is supposed to be an historic moment, a black woman as a vice president. And the Obamas said, well, we recorded that video a few days ago. We didn't have a chance to re-record, sit down and record a 10-minute video with this historic thing. And then when Kamala was designated the nominee by Joe Biden last month or 2 months ago, the Obamas were the last people basically on the block to come out and endorse her. So that's one of the serious issues that she has, is that likability. And the campaign she's running also seems similar in a lot of ways itself.
Yeah, you know, you bring up the Obama part of that. I was fascinated that his statement, everyone else is like, oh, Kamala Harris, she should be the nominee. We endorse her, blah, blah, blah. And his statement was like, I can't wait to see what process our party comes up with to see who might be the nominee. He was like, wait a minute, this is totally out of the step. They don't like her seemingly at all. And that's been pretty common. I mean, it seems like Kamala Harris is capable of pulling off this honeymoon period of likability, where, like, even when her initial, you know, campaign started in 2019, 2020, you know, she had a few good weeks there. She had, you know, a good launch, and she raised a bunch of money, and she had, you know, she rose up in the polls. She got into low double digits a couple times, and then obviously faded away before any votes were actually taken. Her likability is a massive problem, as she's actually seen. And this is why I didn't understand the initial strategy of the Trump campaign when it came to these debates. When she was trying to taunt him into doing these debates, Accept it. Ask for 25 debates. So how many will she do? Will you show up every single Tuesday at 4 p.m.? Well, let's do it every week. Whatever you want, anything to get her in front of the American people.
I think that's right. And the only fear that the only worry that Donald Trump would have in those sorts of debates is the worry that he might appear overbearing against a woman. And that's something that he's struggled with previously in the past. But we saw a real serious correction when he was debating Joe Biden. And he basically just let Biden ramble and sat there quietly at the side and then would snipe. And it was one of his more effective debates in the general election since probably Las Vegas against Hillary Clinton. It's a good strategy for him to want to debate her. But I understand why his team would want to remake the terms of that debate, because they had basically agreed to whatever the Joe Biden team had suggested, understanding that they were going to be debating someone who just was having difficulty stringing thoughts together, whose eyes were glazing over in the middle of sentences. So they were willing to say, okay, whatever, whatever you want, you can choose the place. I'll tie both my hands behind my back and wear a gag for half the time, as long as I can debate you for those times. And Kamala Harris is going to be younger and more formidable. But another thing that ties her to Hillary Clinton is this sort of vibes thing that they're pushing out. You remember with Clinton, they had that awful, incredibly cringeworthy theme song, the fight song, with all these theater kids from Hollywood would come together and were singing it. You had I'm with her was basically the campaign slogan. These, while she has had a lot of serious policies, a lot of the campaign just kind of went on these, the vibes of Hillary and being part of history. Kamala Harris is that, and even more so. They tried to make her into some kind of folk hero in 2020. Remember that slogan, I think she said, I'm still talking, or something she said when she was debating Mike Pence. They tried to make her into the cool kid, and it just didn't work. Despite the fact that her heritage, her sex, her gender, all fit into the pantheon of Democrat resumes, they never put her out there because she was incapable of actually being cool. And eventually, well, vibes are really helpful. Vibes are obviously helping her with the polls. James Polos of The Blaze talks about the vibes all the time. That's not what you can run a total campaign on when you're as unlikable as she is.
I think she would love to do it. And the media seems like they want to give her as long a road as possible. But even they seem to be breaking down a little bit and saying, hey, you got to answer an occasional question or present an occasional policy here. Let me go to the one of the things I've noticed on the Trump campaign and the way they've approached this, I think understandably, is that their initial instinct was to basically say, you know, like Kamala Harris's The Border Czar is a good example of this. They wanted to point her out as essentially like even worse than Biden, right? Like the really bad things that happened in the Biden administration are on her. And like they kind of try to separate her and make her seem a little bit worse. You point out in the piece, and I think it's the right approach, is to kind of present her as the status quo. People get this weird sense because of what the media has said that basically everyone loved the Joe Biden presidency. And unfortunately, he got old at the end and now she gets to take over this wonderful legacy. That is not how the American people feel. And I think just making her into Joe Biden 2.0 is enough to remind people actually they don't want four more years of this.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being really surprised in New Hampshire on the primary trail in 2016. I was talking to a cab driver, and he said that he was in between – this was actually in Iowa. He was in between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. He wasn't sure who he wanted to be the next president. And initially, that surprised me. And then by the time I got to New Hampshire, I was surprised to hear someone was in between Donald Trump and Marco Rubio. I thought, well, these guys are actually different. What made Trump and Sanders such – kind of similar candidates is they were both massive disruptors, people who were saying this status quo absolutely does not work anymore. And at the time, about well over 50% of the country thought it was going in the wrong direction. Very few people thought it was going in the right direction. And people voted. Bernie Sanders' rise was meteoric. If it hadn't been for the DNC, he probably would have been the candidate. And Donald Trump, of course, famously took the GOP nomination, came back in 2020 for reelect. And right now, those numbers have gotten even worse. The number of people who think that we're going in the wrong direction has increased to over 60%. The number of people who think we're going in the right direction has continued to drop. And that pressure that made the American voter look at people like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump isn't gone. And Kamala Harris can try to pretend that she's some kind of just zany outsider with these new radical, hip, cool, left-wing ideas, but she's not. She's been the vice president for 4 years. She represents the Obama people. She represents the blob. In fact, the only time she's gotten in trouble with the press since she ran for re-election is when she went outside of that neoliberal uniparty sphere to suggest wage and price controls. And that wasn't the walls of press protection cracking or saying we're no longer going to protect Kamala. That was the uniparty, the blob, the D.C. people saying, hold on. These are the parameters for which you will run for president. You're allowed to criticize Wall Street. You're a Democrat, but you're not allowed to actually hurt Wall Street. You're not actually allowed to go outside of these ideas. And that's why they hate Donald Trump, because he's a disruptor. And even though Trump is now a former president, no one can say he's not an outsider. Everyone in this city hates him. If I were to poll everyone within a mile of me, it'd be like 95% of the people cannot stand Donald Trump. And that includes the Republicans. So he is still the outsider, and Kamala Harris is going to have to defend that in the way that Hillary Clinton ended up having to do in 2016.
And the strategy around there is really amazing. I think it's possible we look back at the worst mistake Donald Trump made in this campaign was defeating Joe Biden too badly. Like, it's almost like he should have kept it kind of close and like kept him in the race, because it was such a destructive night. It made his job go from very, very easy to challenging. And let me ask you this, Chris, on that front. There are kind of a couple different ways of looking at this election, where it stands right now. One is, okay, you're getting a boomlet out of the Kamala Harris launch. Donald Trump is in a better polling position than he was in 2016 or 2020. This is going to calm down, and Donald Trump will be able to regain control of this race and will be able to win. The other side is, look, Kamala Harris is rising. Really, the only problem that Democratic voters had with Joe Biden was him being old. They've solved that problem. She can pitch these same strategies, and she's the new one now. Donald Trump seems like the old candidate, and maybe Kamala Harris can win this thing by a decent margin. Either one of those connect with you?
I think, well, unfortunately, they both do. I think the truth is probably going to be somewhere in between. Mm. The week of the Republican National Convention felt very foreign as a kind of conservative thinking person in America, where there was a sense of euphoria. Things were going to go all right. Now, that, of course, lasted a week, because that kind of feeling is supposed to be the feeling that Democrats get. They're the ones who are always actually winning on this. The Kamala Harris, Donald Trump can absolutely still beat Kamala Harris. A lot of her campaign, I think a lot of the popularity that's risen with it, is as thin as a mirage. It's vaporous. It's fake. Her as cool, her as brat, her as whatever, is completely fake. Absolute theater that's been put out as propaganda by people. I mean, you've got Vogue interviewing Tim Walz's dog, as opposed to journalists actually being able to ask questions of the candidates. But Trump also has to change. Trump can't just be a 78-year-old billionaire yelling about perfect phone calls and all the people who have tried to stab him in the back and all the conspiracies against him. By the way, people have tried to stab him in the back. D.C. is absolutely conspiring against him. Somebody shot him in the head on television. I get why he would be angry. But the reason why he won in 2016, to the surprise of so much of the GOP establishment, is he ran on a couple clear principles, on a movement, on the wall, on immigration, on bringing back U.S. jobs, on taking on the foreign policy and the unending wars. In 2020, he ran less on a movement and more on Donald Trump. 2024, we saw last week some kind of return to that 2016 strategy, where he was talking about, hey, you don't need me to tell you what it's like to live under Kamala Harris's hellscape, because you're doing it right now. Mm. She is currently in the Oval Office, or in the White House, excuse me, at least the old executive building, maybe in the White House more and more. We'll see who's actually running this country over the next few weeks. That's the kind of strategy I think that will get voters back. But it's a difficult line to walk, and it seems like they're bringing on the old 2016 team with Corey Lewandowski, and he's been in talks with a number of veterans of that original campaign, people who Trump is comfortable with, people who are loyal to him. And if they can get it back on track, as much as anyone can ever get Trump to do anything he doesn't want to do, then I think they still stand a good shot at winning this.
Chris Bedwitz is senior political editor at D.C. correspondent for Blaze News. Check out the new piece. It's Kamala's Risky Hillary Clinton Gambit over at theblaze.com. Chris, thanks for taking the time, man. Appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Do you ever feel like you just want to get out of here? Kind of like, yeah, everything's not going so well. I kind of want to just like pick up my roots and just go somewhere else. If you happen to be in a blue state, you probably did feel that way. Somewhere 2020, 2021-ish, a lot of people moved. They moved across the country and they needed to find a new real estate agent in an unfamiliar area. Maybe they didn't have any roots there at all. They just wanted to get away from Gavin Newsom or J.B. Pritzker and went somewhere south. A lot of people did that. I know a lot of people in this audience have done that. If you are looking for a real estate agent, the best one in the area you're going to move in, you need realestateagentsitrust.com. Now, there's two parts of this. You're probably selling a home in one place, moving to a place and buying a home in the other. Whether you're buying or selling a home, you need the best real estate agent on both sides of that transaction. It could be in two different states. You can get both of those agents right on realestateagentsitrust.com. The name kind of says it all. They'll walk you through the entire process. They make it really easy for you. So easy that it's actually a free service for you. Realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. Well, the United States is trying to ban election betting as traders flock to predictions sites. There's some that are overseas. There's some that are here. Predict It, we've talked about before. Kalshi is another one that wanted to do election bidding, betting, has not been able to so far. Polymarket is kind of the big one when you're talking about through crypto, but not available to U.S. Investors. I love this from Jeff Merkley, the Democrat from Oregon. To me, it's an enormous corruption. Who expressed fear that well-heeled political or corporate interests could someday come to think, hey, I will spend millions of dollars smearing some candidate to make sure the candidate I bet on wins. Because first of all, there's no candidate people spending millions of dollars on elections now. That's totally foreign. We don't want to corrupt it with those millions of dollars. But like, I don't know if you know this, but like getting control of getting your candidate in front of as the president of the United States, for example, a lot more important than winning a bet. In fact, there's no way you're going to be betting nearly enough money to actually make it worth it to spend millions of dollars to get your candidate to win. Like, it is impossible how stupid some of these people are. And there are representatives. Legitimately, like, if you tried to remove most of your brain and continue to function, you would not be as dumb as some of these politicians are. And yet every day we get the same nonsense. Now, Republicans are claiming Biden committed impeachable offenses, but their next steps are unclear, partially because, you know, basically he already got impeached by his own party and removed. I mean, he's still the president, which is terrifying when you think about it. But in reality, he's kind of out of the picture. And this big strategy that Republicans likely had to reveal this stuff around this time is now getting very much thwarted because he's no longer the candidate anymore. So that whole effort seems to, I mean, it did more in some ways, I guess, than expected. But really what happened was Biden just collapsed on his own. Do you want a job with Kamala? Well, you've got 9 pronoun choices, including who and fair. I don't know what any of those things mean. I will say you also have I and M. G and Gem, or Z and Here, you can check off. And then there's one that just says custom, where you can just write in whatever you want. And my question, I guess, most of all, is not the fact that this is a woke campaign full of nonsense. And I really do wonder, like, if an underling, you know, clicks G and Gem, or Fay and Fair, will Kamala Harris be like, so can you get Fair over there to get me some coffee? Like, does that happen? I've never heard that. I would love to know if that actually occurs. That is something I would love to see. But my main question about it is, if you have something custom where people can just write in whatever they want, why have 9 checkboxes? Just put custom and have people write whatever they want. You're just making it up anyway. And I will say, there was like 100 different genders when we did a show on this. What do you only have 9 for? It's just disrespectful to the other 945,000 genders. Harris is implying that Trump is a coward during a Pennsylvania campaign appearance. And this is a good point. Big time coward, that Donald Trump, you know, the guy who got shot in that same state in the ear. And then while he's being tackled by Secret Services, stands up and says to the audience, fight, fight, fight. That guy's a coward. That's a really good argument, Kamala. Continue with it. It's almost as good as Tim Walz is likable and folksy. Almost on that level. And economists, as I mentioned a little bit earlier in the show, are panning Harris-nomics. Now, first of all, Kamala-nomics rolls off the tongue a lot better than Harris-nomics. Okay? It's a little hard to say, Kamala-nomics, but Kamala-nomics is better than Harris-nomics. But basically, they are I mean, Jason Furman, I thought, had the most interesting reaction to this. He's the old Obama economist. And he was basically like, look, these are crazy ideas, but she's not going to get them done. So I'm not that worried about it. And I guess that's the best take. Like, price controls are so blatantly insane that every economist know. I mean, we cover this in a real poll of economists. Only 2% of people thought the rent control idea they had was a good idea for people. Nobody thinks this is good. But if you kind of, it's easy to get to that place where you think, well, they probably won't get these through anyway. These are really just pitches to voters, and they are popular to voters. So maybe that's your hope as far as the Kamala Harris administration. Not really a distinct positive, though, when you think of these policies and what's going to mean to your family. Americans are hurting financially, healthcare costs are out of control, and we know the government isn't the answer. So what is? Well, Lassie Health is here to shake things up. L-A-A-S-Y. Lassie Health isn't health insurance, it's access to the healthcare that you want without all the red tape, restrictions, and inflated costs. And when you think about inflated costs, think about, we just talked about having price controls. This would be a disaster for the economy overall. You know, if you have employer-based health insurance now, are you going to have it in a Kamala Harris administration? I don't know. Why not go around that whole thing? You don't have to deal with that at all. And go with Lassie. Coverage starts at just $30 a month. For that, you'll get transparent pricing, comprehensive coverage tailored to your needs, and access to healthcare and services without breaking the bank. No annual or lifetime caps on services, and you could start a plan at any time. You'll get over 400 prescription medications for free. 400 medications for free. Free unlimited virtual mental health counseling. Free 24/7 virtual urgent care. Lab tests up to 60% off. Imaging tests up to 75% off. Procedures and surgeries over 50% off. It's Lassie Health. Health, a game changer. Check out affordable plans that put you in control of your health at healthylink.com/stew. For a limited time, you get your first month free, up to $100 off eligible plans. So get healthy, be healthy, and stay healthy without breaking the bank. It's healthylink.com/stew. That's where you get Lassie Health. It's healthylink.com/stew. So DNC kicks off tonight. It's Joe Biden night. A lot of celebration of Joe Biden. He's going to have a speech there. He's going to mumble his way through it. It's going to be really funny. Well, probably pretty sad, too. But whatever the vibe is coming off of that speech, we will be there with you to talk about it on youtube.com/stewdoesamerica. If you go there, you follow the page, click the bell for notifications. You'll get an alert when this speech ends and we go live. And you can ask questions. We go through all of what happened. So check that out tonight, youtube.com/stewdoesamerica. Follow the page, click the bell for notifications, and we will see you tonight after the disastrous speech. What an amazing few months it's been. What was it? June 27th, I think, was the date of the first debate. And at that time, you have a race where Trump's in the lead, but who knows what's going to happen. It's still pretty competitive. Biden has this disastrous debate, goes into a tailspin, and is eventually replaced by Kamala Harris. Now we have what seems like a pretty close race in both the national numbers and in the swing states. So we're now in a totally different world. Now, when we thought Biden was going to be the nominee, we were working on this sort of mini mockumentary, if you will, on how candidates get chosen these days. And there's a theme that we noticed with a lot of these candidates. And even though Biden's not still the candidate, I think it really still applies. And we've got that ready for you going up right after this broadcast. So in 30 seconds, this thing is going to be posted for you on YouTube, youtube.com/stewdoesamerica. I think you're really going to like it. It does point to something very odd about our culture and what we're doing in Washington and how it works. Most of all, though, it's just funny. So I think you're going to like it. It's up at youtube.com/stewdoesamerica. Check it out right now. It's going live right this second. Go over there, follow the page, click the bell for notifications, get all the stuff whenever you need it. Bunch of comedy bits there that I think you'll like. Check it out now.